Welcome to the New Schools Podcast. Our guest today is the co-founder, director, and a Socratic guide at the Humanist Academy. His professional experience includes teaching high school history and math. He's also been a principal, an adjunct professor at Loyola University, and he has worked with National Geographic, leading student expedition trips across the world. We're pleased to have on the show today, Vijay Shah. Based out of Dallas, Texas, he and his brother Jay co-founded the Humanist Academy. Jay now serves on the board of directors for the Academy and is an orthopedic surgeon and assistant professor at the University of Texas Southwestern. The Humanist Academy provides a learner-driven environment where traditional teachers are replaced by Socratic guides, classrooms are replaced by multi-age studios, and traditional tests are replaced by real-world exhibitions. If any of that sounds familiar, they are inspired and affiliated with Acton Academy, and they're doing well. The Humanist Academy has grown from a small schoolhouse into four separate studios for ages 3 through high school. Today you'll hear about students as entrepreneurs as they participate in the business fair, and how Vijay deals with the often challenging discussions of religion and culture, as well as more strategies for supporting learners by stepping back. And now without further delay, here's your host, Shannon Falkenstein, speaking with Vijay Shah.
Hello, Vijay Shah, and welcome to the New Schools Podcast. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me, Shannon. This is amazing.
This is going to be really fun. So I'd love to kick it off with a positive question about, would you tell us what is your favorite thing about working with young learners?
Oh, man. Favorite thing. Oh, that is actually a really hard question because there's probably a list. Just off the top of my head, today, one of the younger warriors, our Spark Warriors, was like, Mr. Vijay, let's play some basketball one-on-one. And like, you know, we have a model where we don't involve ourselves too much, and we try not to get them dependent on adults for anything. But like, there's some really fun moments where, you know, you just play a game with them and you just have fun. And that was really, really fun. I think favorite moments wise, the list is really, really long, but I would say when you step back and you just see how capable they are and how powerful they are, when you just kind of set things up and then allow them to just flourish in an environment or with a challenge that they struggled with. So I'll give you an example. We just came back from a camping trip exhibition, which was part of our Survivor Quest. You had like 35, 40 people. Imagine like 40 adults in a room trying to plan a camping trip. Like, the only word that comes to mind is like chaos, right? Yeah, how is that even going to happen? This is with adults.
Right.
Now they're 7 to 14 and they're planning like, okay, who's going to set up the grills for each family? Who's going to, you know, greet every family? Who's going to do the campfire activities? Like there's yelling and screaming and all this. And then you go to these exhibitions that they host and plan and run by themselves. And you step back and it somehow things click and there's this chemistry and you're just like, if you step back and you just kind of experience it, you're like, wow. And Laura says these words over and over again, or she says these words that are playing my mind over and over again, which is young people are more powerful than we can ever imagine. Children are. And so when you see that, and we get to see that every day, it's amazing.
Right. I love that. That is such a great phrase. Tell us more. So, you know, I'm familiar with your model because full disclosure of Acton Academies. But when you, you know, still when you say, when you opened, you said, this child wanted to play basketball with me, but you know, we try not to really get involved so that they aren't dependent on adults. I think that really piques the interest probably of a lot of people in our audience. Like, what do you mean? Aren't adults supposed to be very integrated into the learning experience? So can you tell me more about that spirit of independence?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think one of the most unique and incredible things about Acton is the role of the adult. I remember talking to one of the guides that was at Acton, who they started their own school. And she was saying, you know, of all the models out there, like, you see a lot of parallels. You see project-based learning out there. You see, you know, Socratic discussion. Like, I used to do, when I was a high school teacher, I used to do Socratic discussions with my students and stuff like that. You see, like, now there's a lot of schools going one-to-one with, like, the technology. They'll have self-paced learning platforms. They'll use Khan Academy and stuff. And, I mean, in a comprehensive way, I have yet to see a model that integrates it all the way Acton does. But even more than that, that role of the adult, that, like, you're not a teacher, you're not the expert, and you are really there to ask questions and inspire, like, curiosity and, you know, provoke that curiosity. And I think it probably makes a lot of people uncomfortable who are unfamiliar with the model, which is why it's such a great question. Cause you're like, wait, they're like, oh, so how do you teach math? And my answer is like, we don't teach math. They're like, wait, what do you mean? You know, it's like, well, we'll set them up. And Montessori is a great example of this because they learn from the environment. They learn from working from the materials. And you might do what we would call an equip launch, which is like a presentation where, oh, here's how this material works. But then the guide steps back and they just get to play and explore these materials and inherently allow their curiosity. You know, every human being, I believe, is in this world to find their place and to learn about the world and themselves and make an impact. Leave, you know, with having some meaningful contribution. And I think that's at the heart of this model. It's like, let's get out of the way. Let's not be those adults and those parents that, like, do their science project for their kid because they're worried about how they're going to look, or, hey, they need me to learn this. Like, they don't. The resources are out there. There's infinite teachers out there. And let's just put that in front of them and allow them to explore.
I love that. Don't grab the glue gun. Like, let them do it themselves. I think that's so hard for parents. And I think if parents truly embrace that, or adults truly embrace that, it can be a tremendous relief to let go and really trust, you know,
absolutely,
they've got it. Like, the kids are all right. They've got it.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned being a high school teacher, and I also have a background in traditional, or, and I now like to call it conventional education. Someone was talking to me about, I can't remember where I heard this, but that traditional kind of, you can think about it as being, you know, synonymous with indigenous, you know, when you'd all kind of be in a community and everybody's learning the skills they need to learn at that age, and being taught by many different people and by the environment. And so conventional, I think, is a great word that I'm kind of shifting to. So conventional, you and I both worked in conventional schools. Would you tell me your origin story about, like, how did you come to decide to do something so different?
Wow. And that's a cool distinction. I kind of use traditional and conventional synonymously, so I appreciate that. So I guess my origin story is a little complicated. It starts with being like this child of Indian immigrants whose dream was that their two boys would grow up and be doctors. And I was just, you know, I decided, like, to take kind of my own non-traditional or conventional path. And my older brother, he's an orthopedic surgeon. He's the co-founder of the school, and he's been our catalyst for, like, hey, we gotta start a school. We gotta do something better than what's out there. And for me, I remember being around 16 and job shadowing a doctor, and it wasn't for me. And that was the first time I actually went in the field. And side note, like in Acton, you know, you have middle schoolers trying to secure apprenticeships and get that real world knowledge. I can't emphasize how important that is and how amazing that is that they get that at such an early age. And so I job shadowed a doctor in the ICU, and I went back to my parents and said, I don't want to do this. Like, this is not for me. And I remember sitting in a discussion in like an honors government class my senior year and being like, this is fun. Like, I want to do this. I want to do discussions and I want to do projects with youth. And I was like, my brother, like, yeah, he heals the body. Like, that's cool, but that's just the body. Like, let's work on the mind. Let's work on the, you know, intellectual growth. Like, that's where, you know, that's where it is and stuff. And so my parents, like, were really upset. They were like, how could you, you know, go into education? And then they came around to it. The first conversation, my mom was totally against it. The second conversation, my mom was like, okay, fine. Why don't you just be a pharmacist like your dad? And she just didn't get it. Long story short.
That's the same thing, yeah, mom.
It was really funny. and then, but you know, I love my parents, and they come to the school like every day. My dad's outside greeting the Warriors. I mean, it's amazing. And they've been a tremendous support. I wanted to teach history. Like, I was good at math. I had all this AP credit and all that, but it wasn't my thing. Like, it wasn't fun for me. I wanted to do like ideas and discussions and go back into ancient times and reenact scenarios where they had to make decisions and stuff. And so I went through all that. I taught high school history. I taught a little bit of high school math. I taught some, I taught Hindi at Loyola University as like an adjunct professor.
Wow.
Then my first department head ended up becoming like the superintendent of three alternative schools, and he needed somebody on his leadership team. So he was like, hey, can you be an assistant principal at one of these schools? And so I took that role, and then I ended up being like the interim principal because the principal had some health problems. And that was a really cool experience. This was inner city Chicago, working with at-risk youth. And I learned so much through that process. And we used a lot of self-paced platforms there too.
Wait, what year? Just curious with the self-paced platforms, because I didn't even hear about Khan Academy until like 2012, I want to say. Like,
this was right around then. So this was 2013, 14, 15.
Okay.
That was with like Ombudsman West in Chicago. And the mission was really cool. Like, there's all these dropouts and at-risk youth in the inner city. And if you can put them on these platforms where they can learn at their own pace, they can do credit recovery and they can graduate. And this is a whole nother topic, but I met some amazing students who had gone through more trauma and more challenges in like a few years than people do in lifetimes. And their resilience to say like, hey, I want to graduate. I want to be somebody, I want to do something, was so inspiring. So those are stories for another day. So I went through that, you know, and it was funny. There's like two kind of things that stood out. When I was in a traditional high school, a conventional high school, excuse me, it was like I had 130 students, and I couldn't, you know, you try your best to connect with them. Some of them will come to you after school or during lunchtime, and you give them that time because it's really fun. But like, how do you really connect with them and support them in the right way? When you're grading, like, let's say we did a writing project, we did a paper, you got to grade 130 essays, with quality. Like, it's that it's system. Like, so you can incorporate self-paced stuff or, you know, Socratic discussion. You could do your best. And there's a lot of teachers that I worked with them who work really, really hard, but that system it's not conducive. You got them for 45 minutes, you know, once a day. And so that was a challenge. And then when I was at Ombudsman, I kept thinking, with this else, with the technology that's out there, there's got to be like a gifted school like this that allows people to learn at their own pace and then work on things they're curious about and projects. And then we moved to Dallas as a family in 2015, And I remember this. I'll never forget it. Like November 28th, 2015, it was a Sunday. And a friend of mine who's been in Dallas heard of Acton Academy and said, "Hey, you should check this out. You just moved here. I know you're in education. It seems like a cool model. Maybe you can connect with them or something." And I watched Disruptive Education video. I start looking at all the other blog and different things on the website. And it, you know, when you find something that like resonates with your soul, it's like, this is it. You know, I told my brother, you've been talking about starting a school for like 12 years now. I never actually thought I would be a part, like start a school. Like to me, I was like, just plug me into a cool place. I'm good. And it was just, everything just seemed right. And so I emailed Matt Clayton at that time because he was Jeff would call him the evangelist. You probably remember because you guys are around the same time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, "Hey, the deadline's December 1st and I got 3 days. Can I get a couple weeks?" And he's like, "Yeah, sure. No problem." And we filled out the application and Acton was everything I had ever dreamed of in a school. Like I was like, wow, this actually exists. Like I tried to do this as little as I could in my classroom. But you know,
wow. I have such a similar experience. Like I was a middle school science teacher in New York City and also trying to do, you know, the creative and the peer editing and the, you know, the hands-on learning and set up the game and have them go around, like all of it. And it was so exhausting and overwhelming. 32 kids in a class, rotating through every 45 minutes. So overwhelmed and felt like I was just failing every day. And then
you're just on an island, right?
Just so hard. And I would see other teachers and be like, how are they doing that so well? Because it was very difficult for me. And in 2015, the same thing at the end of October was when I had heard of Acton, but I hadn't researched it yet. And then I ran into Juanma from Guatemala who told me about his at a dinner. And the same thing that night, I went on the website and it was like, this, you know? And then I just
applied
that same thing. And then actually I applied and I turned it in. And then I remember having to do a video, right? And nobody back then, that was not a thing. And so I'm like, I couldn't stop being like anxious about it. So at 2 a.m, like how I look at 2 a.m, I just whipped out the iPhone and I was like, if they don't like the raw me, then too bad. And I was just like, here's my 2-minute video. And I just sent it and I went to bed. And then like 2 days later, we went to India for 3 weeks for like a thing and a seminar.
Wow.
Traveled around India. It was amazing. And then we came back and I got it and I was so excited. So we were like right there at the same time.
Yeah. You remember those first like owners conference meetings? There's like 20 of us in that church behind Acton. And Jeff was saying like, hey, you know, we're getting like 60 applications a week. This is going to triple, you know, and then next year there was like 60 and then the next year there was like 100. It's just cool to see it all unfold. And there's like over 300 now or whatever.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. So cool. Well, I love hearing your story. And it's so cool that you pre-staged it, like that you were already thinking self-paced and, you know, cause I wasn't there yet when I found it, but that's so cool. Our audience is composed of a lot of parents and educators who are feeling frustrated or limited by the conventional system or who are worried about the future and that the system isn't preparing kids well for that. So, but also they're like afraid or don't know exactly what to do to break out of this. Mm-hmm. What would be your advice to a parent in that situation?
If they're so I understand the question correctly, like if they're afraid to break out of the traditional or just kind of in general, like
kind of like they're hearing that call, like to, you know, that stirring of, you know, I want to do something different, but they're worried, you know, what about college? What about grades? What about accreditation? What about, you know, those kind of questions. Like they're just, they don't know. They're afraid to break out of something that we all know because we all grew up in it. What would you counsel them?
That's a really hard question, I think, because you just don't know like the level of fear and how it can consume somebody. And I think that's, it's really hard to kind of, you know, get that out of somebody's mind. And I think I really, you know, one of the metaphors we use at Acton that we've, you know, taken at THA is the hero's journey, right? And that ability to like really drive our decisions because we want to just do something different and more meaningful, or do something that takes us out of like our shell and provides a lifelong transformative experience that's going to have struggle, that's going to have chaos, but along the way, you're going to discover these treasures that you wish like you always knew about, or, you know, that are going to change your life in such a meaningful way. And I think the first step is like just kind of like answering that call, the call to adventure. You can't go on a hero's journey if you don't enter the cave that you fear, you know? So I think like maybe if you're still kind of looking at different options, I would say like do your research, and there's a lot of stuff out there. Definitely check out Acton Academy if they're listening, because it's unbelievable. And, you know, kind of check out the videos, talk to people, talk to the guides, talk to the owners or whoever is willing to kind of have a conversation. I know that one thing that's powerful about Acton, which I think every school should have like a requirement, is like, would you send your own children to this school? Right. And so, and I know you can't say that for everywhere. Some people very courageously and admirably work in like inner city or different situations where it may not be the best for their own children, but they want to, or what, you know, wherever you're from. But like the idea is like in Acton, you know, all of the people who've started them have done it for their own children. Like there's a love there, and there's a, hey, this is the type of standard that I want in my home. And now if you can extend that mindset, not just protecting your own nests, but like thinking about every child as, you know, a citizen of the world and a child of, you know, a bigger universal global family, you know, you could say children of God, or if you believe that. And so then like they all deserve something like this, something better. So I know my thoughts are a little bit scattered in that, but like, I think that there, you really have to kind of open your eyes to like, wait a second, these schools look like the exact same, you know, there might be new desks or new technology, but like the methods, like the exact same as they have been for like 100 years. Come on, man. Like we got to do better. Let's take out two things: industrialized education and behaviorism, like this idea that they are, you know, tabula rasa, that there are these empty slates and they need adults to jam information into these, you know, incompetent, incapable, empty vessels. They are full of wisdom, knowledge, and genius, and we need to allow them to thrive.
I love that. I love that. We often use a metaphor at school of a container that you're filling, right? Versus a plant. It's like, you wouldn't have put water in both of them, but they're, you know, it's a completely different concept. So
that's awesome. I love that metaphor. The first time I heard it was Ken Robinson. I think it was part of that, one of those documentaries, like looking, Waiting for Superman, or one of those, documentaries where he said it. And Allison, I forgot her name.
Gopnik.
The gardener. Yeah, Gopnik.
Yeah, the gardener versus the carpenter.
But you have to look at, we have to look at our children as these young heroes, as these geniuses, as these more than this block of clay or this empty vessel, like you said, but as this plant, these seeds with infinite potential.
I love that. We did a little positive discipline parent night, and our teacher of positive discipline, wonderful, she brought everyone a plant and all the plants were different. So you had a cactus, you had a ficus, whatever. And then she's like, but she had all the plants lined up. Okay. And so then we're all looking at the plants. She's like, you're each going to get a plant, you know, but then she decided which one we would get. And then she asked us, is that the plant that you wanted? And it was a metaphor, right? It's like,
that's so cool.
Maybe you wanted the succulent, but you got something else. And so then she was like, okay, let's extend that metaphor is, you know, to your child, right? Like, are you getting exactly what you expected or wanted? Of course not, because this is a fully functional, self-determining being who's going to do what they want to do. So you have to love and accept that little being and give them the environment that they need, you know, and let them self-determine their growth. So yeah, this is so beautiful. So I'll never forget that. So tell me about your name, the Humanist Academy. So I noticed that some Actons stick with, you know, Acton Academy, wherever, city, state, and some go ahead and get creative with their name. Tell us about your name choice. I love the name of your school.
So fundamentally, like, it's just, you know, what is the common platform, the universal idea or foundation where we can all connect, where regardless of your faith, your ethnicity, your, you know, religion, gender, like anything else, like, you are a human being. And how do you define what is a human being? And for us, it's like, it's somebody with limitless potential, someone with infinite potential. And that's, you know, something like, no matter how we can sit here and find so many like divisions, like we could say, oh, you're this or you're that, or you're from here, you're from there, and this is how we're different. But if we kind of fundamentally just remember, like, hey, we're all human beings, we're here for a higher purpose. There's a spiritual element to who we are as beings. And I think that brings out, personally, that's the greatest part of what we are. That's something I've kind of learned through, you know, growing up and in my own culture, and also through like spiritual, you know, a movement and stuff like that. And then one of my teachers that I worked with, so I was her supervisor, and I was leaving the school, and she wrote a poem called The Humanist. And she talked about, like, a humanist is somebody. So a lot of people think, like, oh, like, are they like this atheist, non, you know, whatever. And I'm like, look, we believe in the human spirit, and we believe that, you know, we're not atheists, but we had families who don't believe in God that come to our school. And that's totally cool. Like, you can, as a human being, you have ability to believe in whatever you want to. But she wrote this poem called The Humanist and talked about how this is someone who really just cares for humanity, and how a humanist is committed to four things. Your growth or your development as a human being, human values or virtues, you know, integrity, dignity, honesty, gratitude, like those kinds of things, human welfare, making society better, and the inherent dignity or integrity that you have as a human being. And so it was just like, it was beautiful. And so, like, I talked to our board and my brother and all of us, and I was like, hey, what if we went with the Humanist Academy? And it kind of worked out pretty well for us. So.
I love that. I really, really love that. And do you, that's an interesting question about religion. Like, how do you deal with that? Like, I grew up in a Catholic environment and in a Catholic school. But one thing I loved about my Catholic school is that we really studied all the religion, or, you know, all the religions that we knew of, right? And we treated it, and then later I studied anthropology, so we treated religion more as a aspect of human culture, which I thought was also an interesting way of looking at it. But I know that it can be a sticking point or a trigger sometimes, and so. Yeah. You know, maybe we shouldn't even go there, but like, maybe.
No, let's talk about it.
Okay, cool. Like, how do you guys deal with that at school?
It's a great, great question. I'm going to tell you kind of in my own research. So I did a master's at University of Chicago in the Divinity School. And I wanted to study like Sanskrit and like South Asian, like Indian philosophy and stuff like that. But I also took a Koine Greek class, and I got to read the Bible in like its original language and stuff like that.
Pre King James.
Right, right, right. Pre King James. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I need to have another conversation about that with you.
A lot of people don't know that, you know, that Koine Greek was like the original language or whatever. And a lot of my friends in these classes were like divinity students who were going to go on to ministry and stuff. And, you know, you just make like amazing connections and amazing friends. And I think I'm going off on a tangent now, but like, I think at the core of all of religions is, you know, this pursuit, this union for a higher spiritual truth. And, you know, how we get there can be different. But at least, you know, hey, we're on the same team. Like we're all trying to be better human beings and, you know, in the eyes of the higher power, do the right things, do things that make us proud and all that. And I think, so like there's a book called Nurturing the Spirit by Alan Wolfe. It's something that a lot of Montessori programs will recommend or even have as part of their required readings. And in that, in the third chapter, they talk about how like what happens in schools now, in conventional schools, is a student will ask a question like, oh, like what happens when you die? Or, you know, does God exist or something? And teachers generally are told like you can't engage, like that's not, you know, separation of church and state. And so what you come off at is like, we can't talk about that here. And now you've just kind of deprived an opportunity to nurture curiosity. And what's beautiful about the Acton model is that we don't have teachers that give answers. We have guides who ask questions and nurture curiosity. So, and this is what they talk about in that book. Like it's amazing. They're like, that's an awesome opportunity to say, oh, that's a fascinating question. What do you think about that? Or what do your parents say about that? Do you want to go ask them and share with us? Like, what did you learn about it? And in Acton and, you know, at the Humanist Academy, we have Socratic dialogue with some amazing, the culture is so amazing where, you know, they're respectfully disagreeing with each other left and right. And it's awesome. And so someone can bring in a perspective and everyone can just appreciate that. And then they're building their relationships as these smaller tribes, you know, they're engaging in projects and stuff that build their unity. So now they can say, hey, this person believes this and I have love for them. You know, I respect them. And it's cool, you know? And I think it's a microcosm for the type of world I hope, you know, we can really create.
I love that. Me too. That's great. I know you're talking about how adults are kind of on the side and they're, you know, setting up the stage, but the children are really the players. How does one become a guide like that? You know, I don't think adults are naturally set up like that or educated like that. So how do you train guides to be able to work in that way successfully?
And you're talking specifically for our studio? Like like I just hired somebody and I'm like, hey, how do I get them going? Kind of developing. Man, it's hard. You know, we've definitely been blessed to have people with most of the people we've hired so far have had some Montessori background because the parallels are so, you know, they're mind blowing. Like, I think this is like Montessori 2.0. I know there's some Montessori purists who'll be like, well, you don't have all the materials out. And that's a strong argument. Like the hands-on materials, the manipulatives, and the thought that Maria Montessori put behind them, it's amazing. And we have our Spark Studio is a full-on Montessori. It's a great foundation for, and then we started incorporating some of the Montessori materials in our elementary studio as well, as part of just for them to be able to learn math or language and stuff like that. But so having some Montessori definitely helps. We actually do a lot, like we'll meet 2 weeks before the school year And something that I've just loved, like, you know, we host in Dallas, like a conference every year and stuff. I just love getting people who genuinely want to improve in terms of their role as an educator, as a guide, and when they work with youth, with younger heroes, like to get them like thinking about different things, having certain discussions that can change the way that you interact or your role and kind of improve it and stuff. And so we spend like 2 weeks kind of going through certain, like, now there's this onboarding quest, which is really cool that Jeff and them at Acton put together, but like going through those kinds of discussions and really translating it into like actual practice. But it's hard. We also do a lot of observing and giving feedback in our studio. So you spend time, you know, sitting back, observing, taking objective notes, and then sharing highlights and also asking questions like, hey, how did you feel about your interactions or those questions you asked or whatever, and giving people time to reflect. But it's not easy. It's definitely not easy. And sometimes like that adultness of you comes out of like asking questions you already know the answer to, asking leading questions. And so being kind of heightened on that. Also, like, I think the question you're kind of asking is underlying it all is like, how do you change somebody's mindset?
Yeah. And
it's a really hard question. So, you know, there's a lot of reading that goes into it. There's a lot of reflection, a lot of going in, messing up. You know, it's the hero's journey. Ultimately, it's like, go in, but like, you genuinely want to be better. You know, you genuinely accept feedback. Like if somebody in our team, where I would draw the line is like, if they're not willing to accept feedback or they're not willing to kind of own their mistakes and grow, that's a red flag.
Right, right, right. Yes. With anything, right?
Yeah.
That's really enlightening. Thank you. So tell us about COVID. Like, how has your school been affected? I know some have been decimated, some have grown exponentially. Like, how's it going for you?
Man, oh, and it's such a long spectrum now, right? Like, if you ask me this question, like, in April, then I had like a few weeks to be like, hey, here's kind of what's going on. But now, you know, it's like 8-9 months. And I'll share like, I guess, two stories to kind of sum it up. I would say overall, it's been great. Like in this type of model, to have a smaller group of our we call them our warriors, to have a smaller group of warriors, and to be able to be creative with our schedules or with, you know, options, the hybrid stuff. And like, to me, that stuff, I know it's stressful and it's like, what are the parents going to say? But to me, it was also kind of fun. Like, we get to be creative and come up with some type of solution that can serve this wide range of families with different levels of comfort. Like one family has, you know, older people at home, or, you know, they're doctors and they work in very risky environments, and so they're like not going to touch foot anywhere near our school. And then some families are like, we don't even believe in masks, and you know, and that level. And so finding the right balance and mix, sticking to principle and not allowing emotion and relationships and whatever to sway us and all that, like in that moment, it was fun for me. I don't know, I have this weird sense of fun maybe, but I'll tell you like two things. So when COVID hit and it was like March, I think like March 12th or something, last year, like this year, in March, 2020, when everything in Dallas basically had to shut down, and I was actually out of town on a funeral for a cousin of mine, and my guides were there, and we did like a Zoom or a Google Hangout training like Sunday night.
Right, like nobody even had Zoom then, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. Yeah, and thankfully, like Google has been so good to us. We're a nonprofit, and like, you know, having Google Hangouts and all this stuff. And so, but that next morning, Monday morning, we just over the weekend said, hey, we're gonna have to close the school down. Close it, meaning learning never stops, yeah, but the physical building is going to be closed. And so I remember leading the ES launch, and I'm not even joking, Shannon, like they I felt like I was in a corporate meeting. Like they knew they were mute. They muted their mics. They were telling each other like, hey, mute your mic. You know, you're making distraction. They're raising their hand, using the buttons. Like they were better at it than I was. And the responses were so articulate and well thought out. And I was just like, this is incredible. They're only good at this, not only, but a huge reason that they are good at this is because of the systems and processes that Acton provides that they've been doing for this long. So they can be creative and adapt. Like one of the biggest qualities you get, you know, you hope that everyone gets through education is adaptability. Put me in any situation, let me figure this out. And you saw that there. And I'll just kind of quickly fast forward. They then did their chemistry and rockets quest. They were doing their last session quest. The middle schoolers were doing a psych quest where they literally made documentaries about my relationship with stuff. And they studied like minimalism and Marie Kondo and stuff like that. And they tried to live off of like a limited amount of clothing and things. They did things like no technology for a day and then reflected on it. And it was unbelievable. And then they made a 4-part documentary on it. They were on like the ABC News for how they handled COVID and how the transition was. I mean, it was amazing. And I'll tell you, it wasn't all roses and like, it was hard. We lost some families probably directly related to COVID, whether our mask policy was too, you know, strict or whatever. But like the fact that during COVID, with all this going on, and even with cases rising, they pulled off an in-person exhibition, the camping trip. We had like 33 families or something show up, and they rocked it. So I'm just like so grateful for their courage and their adaptability, and they're genius.
Wow. Those are great stories. I love that. Psychology quest, that really piques my interest. Did your guide invent that one?
She did. And we have some guides that are just, they're just so amazing, super creative. And and it just fits so well with them being at home, being able to like count their things. And then 1 week they had to like create experiences with less stuff for your family. So it was like a board game night or like take everybody out on a walk and talk about things or whatever. It was just really, really cool.
That is so cool. So BJ, one thing I've always noticed about you and really admired is your energy and your optimism. So
you bring that out of me, Shannon.
Come on. But how do you maintain that? Do you think it's like you've just always been that way? Or do you have a mental a meditation practice, you exercise all, like, tell me your secret, BJ.
No, I don't think I'm always like this. I think when I'm around people who are interested in the same things or just excited like you, or, you know, a lot of times we get to meet in the, you know, Acton owners conferences, and it's just, I don't know, something comes out because you're just in this environment with all these amazing people who want to do such revolutionary, impactful things. And that's honestly like every day, like I'm around, this is why like I would never change my job or profession or whatever, because like I'm around these young people who exude that. They're so curious, they're so fascinated by things. And it's definitely disheartening to see the trajectory of, you know, most of them in conventional schools, like they grow older and that light in their eyes is kind of gone. Whereas here, you know, depending on when you walk in the studio, it can be pin drop silence with a bunch of them engaged in either math or reading or writing or something. Or it's like rambunctious and loud and rowdy, but they're collaborating and working on a quest. They're outside trying to start a fire with a magnifying glass or something. I mean, it's a lot of fun. And so I think it brings it out of me. I think that people that I admire who have way more energy than me, what I've noticed is that they're like tapped into like a higher, and this is not me at all. I hope one day I could get there, but they're like tapped into like a higher frequency. They kind of feel like the vibrations of the universe. They're like at a harmony with things. And so they can tap into some higher energy there. So I try to meditate every day. So who knows, one day maybe I'll get there. But you know, you can ask my wife. When I come home, sometimes I'm like a zombie.
Yeah, right. You need to like unplug for a little while.
Yeah.
Well,
but you have the same energy, Shannon, I must say. It's awesome. I always love talking to you.
Well, we're like the Mutual Admiration Society. I think we're really similar, and we've been doing this the same amount of time. And yeah, thank you. Yeah, I always really enjoy interacting with you. So we are about to launch our children's business fair, and we're doing it online this year. And I know that you guys had a very successful business fair recently. Did you? Did you not?
So we canceled ours. It was supposed to be last spring, it was supposed to be April or May 2020. But we canceled that one. We didn't end up doing it because of COVID. It was like too soon.
Yeah.
So we're planning to have one this May.
Okay.
The one we had the year before was definitely amazing. It's another one of those examples of like how children are far more capable than we can ever imagine. Like you just see this incredible environment of all these young people interacting with adults. You know, they're like, they got their prices, they got their products, they have their pitches ready. And I still don't think I can be an entrepreneur like today, to this day. I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm like, do I have this stuff figured out or not? And I see them 5 years old to 15, and they get that opportunity to run their own business, even for a day. A lot of them will continue with it afterward.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's amazing to see that. So
it really is. It's so cool. So, okay. So my final question is always, and you kind of already said it in the beginning, but I'm going to like push you a little bit farther.
Sure.
That, I think metaphor is such a great way of, you know, thinking about new things. So if you could offer a metaphor of conventional schooling compared to what you're doing now, what would be your metaphor?
All right. I'm going to just go off the top of my head here.
Do
all
it.
Right.
Yeah.
Allegory of the cave. Like you got these people that are chained, that are looking at the same shadows, right? And I haven't read this in a while, but just from what I remember, and that's what they think like life is. And they're kind of just stuck there, and they're like, whoa. And I mean this like with the utmost respect. I know there's millions of people out there working really hard. I've worked with some of the greatest teachers who work harder than me. They're like more inspiring than me. They're more smart, like they're brilliant, they're smarter, all that stuff. But like, we're still stuck in this system, and we're stuck in these practices. Seth Godin said it like so well. He was like, people, educators, administrators, teachers, like they don't go to school every day asking like, what are schools for? And I get to walk into a place every day being like, this is it. This is what school is for. It's so cool. I don't know how to explain it, or like, no matter what I will say will be an underestimation of what you see going on in a type of environment like in Acton. If it's, you know, guided with the right people and the right energy and the right principles. But what you see every day is these young people taking control of their education, of their learning, and of their destiny, finding their voice, being active members of a community, exploring things that they're passionate about. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Wow, Vijay,
so they're
thank
like,
you.
They came out of the cave. They're out in the world. And they're like, whoa, check
this
out.
Right? Yeah. I love that. Yeah, my husband and I talk about that allegory a lot.
Played cool.
Allegory of the cave, right?
Right.
So, I love that metaphor. Thank you so much. You truly are deeply knowledgeable and very enthusiastic about Acton, and you're a wonderful ambassador of it. And I'm sure that our audience has learned a lot from you and can sense like your your principles and your love for it. I really appreciate talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you. It's the feeling's mutual for sure.
So yeah, thank you so much. So tell me though, before we go, you know, we're going to have in the show notes, like all the good stuff about you and the Humanist Academy. But if somebody wants to get off right now and go check you out, what is your website URL?
Yeah, it's really simple. www.thehumanistacademy.org. So you can definitely go there and check us out. Check out the blog if you can, because it's all what the warriors have been doing currently. There's some updates on it on there. And yeah, I would love to, hopefully whatever you see kind of makes you smile about what's going on in education.
Awesome. And where are you located specifically? You're in Dallas, right? In Irving?
Yeah, we're in Irving. So Irving is like a suburb, or it's a city, but it's right outside of Dallas. So we're in like the DFW Metroplex, you could say.
Okay.
We started in August 2016, and we were the first Acton in the Dallas area, and there's six or seven now. Yeah, and it's so cool, and they're all really, really awesome people. Like, I have talked to and spoke with, I think, every single one of them so far, and you know, Dallas is huge, so I mean, if you ask me, there should be an Acton in like every neighborhood. It'd be great.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. I want to thank our listeners for stopping by today, and I hope they learned a lot and really enjoyed the episode. So
thank you, Shannon.
Talk to you later.
You're fantastic. I appreciate this opportunity and your willingness and curiosity to just listen, engage the conversation, and guide the conversation. It's a blessing.
You're so kind. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the New Schools Podcast. Tell a friend. Previous episodes and show notes, including any books or websites our guests recommend, can be found at thenewschools.com. If you're a parent who is looking for a new school for your family, send us a message. We would love to help. We can answer questions, share the resources we have, and help you get in touch with people in your area who are on the same path, determined to provide their kids with the best education. It's wildly important work. Thank you for doing it, and we'll see you next time.